You are listening to the Political Periscope, a weekly podcast brought to you by Radio WNET. Interviews on international politics, security, geopolitics, economy, and more. Every Thursday at 7 p.m.
Today's guest of the Political Periscope is Professor Peter Jonathan Starr of the Fatih Sultan Mehmet University in Istanbul, Turkey.
Political Periscope.
How long have you been living in Turkey and how did it happen?
Yes, I've been living in Turkey since 2004, first in Ankara, then in Istanbul. And it happened because I married a Turkish woman when I was in England. And at that time, I was working in a university. I had the opportunity of working in a university in Ankara. And my wife of that time, unfortunately, we're no longer together, but my wife of that time wanted to live in Turkey.
And how was it the first time when you came here? Turkey is very different from Europe, or it is, or isn't?
I would say Turkey is very different from Europe. Even if on the outside you see huge supermarkets, some of the supermarkets are the same. Many of the products look similar. Just an example, you know, Turkish people's print. Very often shop, instead of looking in the main vitrine, in the main windows, they would massage, and then you get different, better. There are all kinds of aspects to the Turkish way of living which are different. In terms of the politics, when I first came, about Turkey joining the EU, but Turkey has become a much more Islamist country since that time. It was the time of the early AKP, as they say, the ruling party, Justice Party. And at that time, the Justice Party was saying that they would join the EU and that they would bring their laws into conformity with the EU. I suppose even in 2004, I didn't believe it would happen. And that's taken place. I mean, the power is very much increasingly centralized. And this has been the case for years on Recep Tayyip Erdogan. What he says happens. In those days, it wasn't so clear. The ruling party was claiming to be inviting people from all points of the political spectrum. And there were people joining the party from a liberal side. There were people joining from the nationalist side. And there was some attempt, it seems, to change the law. There was a new, for example, environmental law, very much modeled on European models, civil law, criminal law. They were all being adapted. But this process was abandoned, really. And I really don't think that there is much will, and perhaps there was never sufficient will in Turkey to join the EU.
And what is the essence of Turkish mentality, and how do they react to this? The country went from Islamic country to very modern in the times of Atatürk, and now it's becoming Islamic and is even Islamist again. How do they cope with this?
Generally, I see Islamism as part of the modern world, a kind of identity politics which is in some ways modern. And these movements which you can find in Turkey, like the Muslim Brotherhood, like Salafism, although they don't explain the religious situation in Turkey in its completeness by any means, the Imam Hatip, they say the mainstream of Islamism in Turkey is also modernist. They are against the traditional schools of law being taught. They tend to have a very modern and rather politicized version of Islam. And this is very much a modern, rather than return to tradition. This is very much a modern movement. I would say that.
So, if I understand well, the Islamism is something modern, a modern tendency in Islam.
I would certainly say so. And this is something I actually studied, because I spent a lot of time in the Middle East. My father, who's now dead, he was an engineer, civil engineer, working on projects in the Middle East. I learned Arabic. I studied history of Islam. And so I'm well aware that the streams of thought which really dominate the headlines are streams which go back to people like Hassan al-Banna in Egypt of the mid 20th century. Salafism is maybe goes back actually to Istanbul and a group around someone called Afghani and his pupil, who was an Egyptian man called Muhammad Abdu. These are all people who were trying to reconcile the old traditions of Islam with the modern world. So I think the Islamism, which you do find in Turkey, characterizing particularly the political circles, is a modern phenomenon. It's not so traditionalist.
So how have Islam changed in Turkey during those past five centuries?
Well, five centuries is a long time, but you could say that Ottoman Islam was dominated by what you could call the mystical organizations or Sufi organizations. And we know that someone like the conqueror of Istanbul, Muhammad II, or Fatih Sultan Mehmed, as they say in Turkish, he was for a long time an admirer of the so-called Hurufiya version of mystical Islam. And many of the Ottoman sultans were strongly influenced by these what are well-known whirling dervishes, the Mevleviya. These are all what you could call Sufism, and that was a very important aspect of Islam throughout the centuries, even into the 19th century and the modernizing movements. Maybe in the 19th century, you could say that Turks took different routes. Some took secularizing routes. Some took an attempt to bring Islam into harmony with philosophy. So people like Ibn Sina, Avicenna, were read, and there are more manuscripts of Ibn Sina here in Istanbul in the libraries than anywhere else in the world. But also there was an interest in classical Sufi movements and some sort of revival of Ibn Arabi and Jalal ad-Din Rumi. And these were characterizing intellectual life in the center of the empire here in Istanbul. And different sultans took different perspectives. Famously, Abdul Hamid II, the Red Sultan, as he's called. It's not red because of his socialism. No, he was an Islamist. He was quite deeply Islamist and promoted at one time pan-Islamism and Salafism. So different sultans had very different views. Someone like the fifth Murad was absolutely westernized, you could say, and Abdul Majid to a large extent as well. So, you know, there is a whole spectrum and a kind of confusion in Islam. Well, like in any civilization, any diverse culture which has survived for hundreds of years, it's understandable. It's also the case in Europe. So many diverse opinions.
Let's get back even further. Where did the Turks come from and when?
Yes. Well, the Turks come from Central Asia, and languages related to Turkish would be languages like Mongolian. There are some shared words even with Chinese, some loan words from Chinese in coming into Turkish. But then the Turkic tribes, who were nomadic tribes, began to move towards the west, and they moved initially into the area which is now Iran, and they adopted many Persian ways. They adopted also the Islamic religion, and one of the main tasks that they were engaged in was being soldiers. The Arab caliphs recognized that the Turks were very good soldiers and they were very good horsemen. And so by the 9th century in Baghdad, the army was Turkish, and there was a great movement of Turks into the Islamic Empire and the adoption of Islam at that time. And subsequent to that, you know, as is well known, in the 11th century, the Turks, the Seljuk Turks, conquered Anatolia. And that was the death knell of the Byzantine Empire, if you like. So by 1453, there was the fall of Constantinople to the Turks.
And then how the empire spread?
Yes, well, these are matters which have a lot to do with Polish history, because the empire spread, in the case of the Ottomans, first to the European side. And so places like Thrace, many areas of the Black Sea came under Ottoman control. The Ottomans spread from a small area of Anatolia. At that time, say in the in the 14th century, when the Ottomans had their origins, there were many small dynasties called beylikler in Turkey. And the most successful militarily was the Ottoman, and the best placed for expansion was the Ottoman. And they expanded into Europe, much of more, northern Greece, what is now northern Greece, Bulgaria. These areas became Ottoman. The Ottomans also then conquered one after the other Islamic dynasties of Anatolia. And in the beginning of the 16th century, they also marched to Egypt, and they added Egypt, a very important addition to the empire. And they began to take North Africa. And when I say they came into conflict with Poland, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, because they were also in the area which is now Ukraine, fighting against the Christian forces, sometimes more successfully, sometimes famously unsuccessfully, like at the siege of Vienna in 1683.
I noted that there are at least two cities that during Ottoman rule had their names still, like Constanța in Romania, today's Romania, was Căstânge, so it's only Turkicized version of this name, and Constantinople was Constantinople. Why didn't they change names? They had this policy, or
In fact, the word Istanbul comes from the Greek. Interestingly enough, it comes not from the Greek word Constantinopolis, but it comes from Istinpolin. In other words, into the city, so movement into the poli, the city. And many, even today in Greece, you can refer to Constantinople as η πόλη, the city, the biggest and the most important in their history. The word Istanbul is a Greek word, but many names were changed or Turkified. Now their origins are less clear. A city like Balıkesir comes from Pelia Castra, the old, Greek Byzantine name. There are some cities called Bolu, like Inebolu, and there is a city called Bolu. And these are all the Greek word poli, again, city. And other places have had their names changed. So there is continuity and there is change.
And what time period does the name Istanbul come from?
Well, I think that even in the 19th century, there were different names used of this city, reflecting the different layers of history, which are evident here. So you could still say Constantinia, and that was still one of the most widely used. It's on the coins of the Ottoman sultans, Constantinia. There was a movement, however, amongst the patriotic Turks to reject the name Constantinia and to use Istanbul, and even amongst some to change it to Islambol, in other words, full of Islam. So change from Istanbul to Islambol. And different politicians had different views on this. But really, it wasn't until the Republic period and Atatürk, Mustafa Kemal, that it was decided that definitively they would use the word Istanbul and all other names would be rejected.
Istanbul is a very diverse place, and it always has been this kind of place. How was it possible the coexistence of Turks, of Muslims, of Jews, Christians, even Orthodox patriarchate here in Constantinople and then Istanbul?
Yeah. I would say that it's not the case that Islam automatically persecutes and eliminates the other communities that were here. However, I don't think we're talking about a kind of multicultural ideal at all. What we're talking about is a ruling class, which would be Turkic and Muslims, and they would be the army, and control is very much in their hands, tax is very much in their hands. But the economy would be still dominated by Greeks and increasingly Armenians. They were very large communities at some point, and in some areas, the majority. Say in the 19th century, I've heard estimates that in Anatolia and Istanbul itself, 40% of the population would be non-Muslim. And there was a kind of tolerance, but it was a tolerance on certain very specific terms. And I would say that the history of Christianity under Islam is always a history of some attrition, sometimes more, sometimes less, but always the non-Muslims are the second-class citizens. But again, maybe we can't regard this as so shocking, or because much the same situation occurred in many areas of Europe where one particular religion was dominant and it made its dominance felt politically. So, but I would say that there wasn't a kind of peaceful coexistence. There was always clear hierarchy of who was important and who was in favor with the rulers and who was not.
And how is it today?
I would say that the size of the Greek community is so small by now that it's almost irrelevant. Nonetheless, the Greek community is made to feel discriminated against, that's sure. The Greeks I know here are, for example, I went with one Greek friend into an area, a rather Islamist area called Fatih Ismail Ar, where it's very normal to see people wearing the long flowing robes and the turbans, at least the fezes. He was quite frightened to go into that area. He's lived here all his life. He was born in Istanbul, but he didn't want to go into that area. But nonetheless, we went. And I would also say that, you know, the Greek community has become very small by now. And it's really only two institutions which keep it alive. One is the Patriarchate and the other one is the hospital, which is still quite wealthy. It's called Balıklı.
You said the city, just the city. Yes. It's a city that was very important and never really lost its importance since almost 1500 years.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I have visited Greece from time to time, and I remember talking to someone in the street, and he said to me, in Greece we say, "I poli ine mia," there is only one city. And he means this city of Istanbul or Constantinople. And there are these layers of history embodied and the epitome. They are epitomized by the Church of Hagia Sophia, which is absolutely the central building in this city. And so wherever you approach the city from, it's the center. If you're coming from by sea, from the Marmara Sea, it's the first building you see, and it's in the center. If you're coming along the Golden Horn, the old commercial area, and if you go into that building, it's got so much history, and again, layers of history. Some of the finest, if not the finest, Byzantine art that you will see. The building itself is so attractive, so full of mysteries, so full of strange historical artifacts. Even the graffiti, for example, there is graffiti written in medieval Russian by pilgrims. There is graffiti written even in runes by Vikings. There are pictures of medieval ships, presumably made by Westerners, visiting the city, history for so many years. And it was the model for the Christian world. It was the first Christianized civilization. And it was the influence going north across the Black Sea into Ukraine, into Russia, that established Orthodoxy there. Their model was this city. But also in the West, for many years, you know, there was a Bavarian queen who married and went back. Her name was Bertha, who influenced the culture in what is now Germany or southern Germany, and above all Italy, very much modeled on Byzantine ways and the kind of civilization, this merging of Christianity and political power that first took place here.
Let's talk about the Turkish language. Can you say something about, let's start with the basis. What's this language?
Yes, well, it's sometimes called an Ural-Altaic language, or it's regarded as maybe related to the Ural-Altaic languages, the Turkic languages. As I say, they're from Asia. I would say the main difficulty in learning Turkish is the syntax. Individual words maybe are not so difficult. They have inflections, but Polish inflections are much more complicated. But the word order is completely different. You don't have the Indo-European subordination, main clauses, subclauses. There is a system of bringing that extra information generally before the noun. So Turkish sentences have a completely different order. And that's what a learner of Turkish needs to concentrate on in order to succeed in this language. I would say that there are many loan words in Turkish, a bit like in English. Many words from French, many words from Arabic, quite a few words from Persian, So it's really a language which shows its history and its connections both with West and East.
They even say merci.
Yes, yes, you do hear that. Not so often, but yes.
I think in Orhan Pamuk's books, there is a lot of merci, but maybe it was more westernized period.
And westernized families, I think. You know, Orhan Pamuk's family was a very well-educated family, good knowledge of different languages. It's not a word that you would hear necessarily on the street, but you hear many words to do with machinery, for example, words for different parts of the car. Let me think. These things are difficult to bring to mind in a moment, but échappement, for example, or I don't know, many words from French come in. Many words to do with science are based on French, more recently on English. So information science is very much nowadays including English words, but for a long time, for the 19th century, French was dominant.
Last question. Why is Turkish written in Latin script, not in Arabic script?
Yes, yes. This is very much up to Atatürk, Mustafa Kemal. He had various so-called revolutions. One of them is called the Harf İnkılabı, and that means the letter revolution, where they rejected the use of Arabic letters and the Arabic alphabet, and they adopted the Latin alphabet with one or two adaptations. And it has a very powerful effect. I hear more conservative Turks lamenting this and saying, what a pity that I can't read my grandfather's tombstone, for example, because it's written in Arabic letters. And I can understand that. But it was very much a movement of associating modern Turkey with Europe rather than the Middle East. The reason, let me mention as well, the reason that was given was that Arabic alphabet is not so rich in vowel sounds, whereas Turkish has many vowels, and these were not reflected in the Arabic alphabet, so it was presented as much more practical to use the Latin alphabet.
Well, I suppose I would agree with this argument, but does it mean that Turks don't learn Arabic, they don't learn Arabic alphabet and Arabic language?
I would say that every single revolution of Atatürk has been, as they say in modern English, pushed back against. You know, there's been a resistance, even a reversal of those revolutions. And a few years ago, maybe it was 5 or 6 years ago, the government sponsored the teaching of Ottoman in every school, not just the religious schools. And so if students are learning Ottoman, they're also learning the old alphabet. So all these things are changing. And I would say every single one of those revolutions that I mentioned of Kemal Atatürk are changing and being eroded, if you like.
By Ottoman, you mean?
By Ottoman, the way Turkish was spoken 100 years ago and say 150 years ago.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
This was the Political Periscope. The podcast is released every Thursday at 7 p.m.